Good morning. Thank you very much to Habitat for helping pull this together, and of course the Shelter Reference Group, who I think as a collective have made some considerable strides since I first heard about this initiative, I think a year and a half ago. As David has mentioned, we've got a pretty full day ahead of us, and so I will try and be as constrained as I can in my introductory comments this morning. Given the fact that we have quite a rich agenda, and there's obviously quite a lot of expertise in the room, I thought I would perhaps make best use of this time by reminding us of all of the big picture. Now, of course, some of what I say will be very familiar to many of you. Some may perhaps be a bit less familiar, and there'll be many things which I'm not aware of and won't have touched upon. So I'm, of course, looking forward to today to actually learn very much from a lot of you in this region, which I have to say is one of those regions I know less about. Although I've travelled here a few times, for example, the Pacific, I really do not know. So I think that kind of regional perspective, I'm very much interested in hearing from you all. When I was putting this together, I mean, James suggested perhaps having a few slides. I mean, to be honest, I only have a few. They're more to give you something else to look at rather than just me. Basically, I'll just share with you a few of the issues, again, from the perspective, I suppose, you know, the global perspective of some of the issues which are very much running around in my head and which hopefully will be addressed or will be addressed at some point during the course of today. To start with, make sure I get the buttons the right way, let's perhaps dwell a little bit on the broader humanitarian context, you know, the sort of global big picture that John referred to. As he said, really in the last decade, we've seen a significant rise in the frequency of hydrometeorological disaster. Interestingly, geological disasters have stayed pretty much consistent. I mean, yes, we've had, you know, the big earthquakes, Haiti, Japan, the earthquake that obviously triggered the Indonesian tsunami back in 2004. But when you actually look at the trends, the trend for geological disasters tends to kind of flatline a little bit, whereas hydrometeorological is rising exponentially. Of course, one can argue long and hard, is that climate change? What's the reason for that? Is that just part of, you know, global changes anyway? But it impacts on our business. So what is the scale of our business? What is the scale of the disaster business? Well, interestingly, UNISDR, the International Strategy for Disaster Risk Reduction, have sort of quantified that the economic impact of disasters per year since the turn of millennium is $200 billion. Now, of course, that is the recorded economic loss. Obviously, there's an awful lot of economic loss that's suffered by people living in informal settlements that's completely off the radar screen. So you can sort of do your own kind of configuration of, you know, what you multiply that annual $200 billion year figure by. That's the economic loss. Of course, that is of huge interest to everybody, you know, whether it's a government or whether, you know, obviously you're an individual taxpayer or in fact you're just trying to earn a living. That impacts on you. And we're aware of the current kind of fiscal crisis we're going through. Well, when you're suffering that $200 billion loss on top of that, you know, fiscal crisis, that is does present a challenge. Well, that's the kind of the numbers side. What about the people side? Well, the recent figures from the IDMC, who track internally displaced people, for 2012, you know, refers to 32.4 million people being displaced as a result of disasters in 2012. The majority of those, again, have been displaced as a result of hydrometeorological disasters. Again, that number just changes. It's slightly up on the year before, but I mean, I remember until 2007, it was a year of significant floods in Asia. And in Asia alone, I think it's like 60 million people were displaced. So the number's huge. So yes, there's the financial side, but there's the people side. And again, back in terms of this disaster trend, and again, apologies for those in the room who know me and have heard me say this before, but I think one important thing to kind of bear in mind is that we often tend to, our kind of attention gets drawn to the big disasters. I think of them, the CNN-type disasters. An interesting kind of indicator for those are the number of international appeals that are launched by the United Nations, or in the case of Red Cross, we launch our own emergency appeal. Over the last 8 years, the number of international appeals for relief per year has been 29. So there have been, on average, in the last 8 years, 29 CNN-type disasters every year. Obviously, some are more worthy than others, but they're all warrant international assistance. However, for the same time period, the last 8 years, the number of disasters that Red Cross, Red Crescent, national societies respond to, so the number of national-level disasters per year is 429. So on average, there's obviously more than one disaster a day happening every day. Now, of course, those disasters, they don't appear on CNN. They are national disasters. They could be regional. Of course, they have a huge impact for that, you know, that government, obviously that affected state, you know, those affected people. But they don't necessarily figure on our radar screen. But, of course, when you actually look at the total impact of disaster, I mean, that's where the bulk of the work is. You know, that, yes, the big disasters, of course, resonate, and they do get the attention. And I'm not saying that they don't warrant attention from the international community. But disaster is predominantly a national business. And, of course, depending on, you know, which nation you're in, you may be better or worse resourced to address those needs. So, again, I think when we think of our conversations this afternoon, it's something that we really need to bear in mind, the disasters. It's a national business. It's a small-scale business that we're not necessarily, as internationals, party to. Thinking about this nature of the business, I think one of the other, I think, trends that I've noticed, and so I suppose the 20 years since I moved from being an architect in the commercial world and moving into humanitarianism, has been perhaps some of the different tags that, as I think about how the business has been recast during that time. Sort of 20 or 30 years ago, there was kind of relief and there was development. And within that, I suppose, there was the focus on community level, community participation, community development, then everything else. I mean, I think one of the issues I've noticed of late, and in fact it's gathering momentum, is the way the business of development and relief is forever being recast or re-tagged. So, for example, some 10 years ago, or maybe a little bit more, disaster risk reduction became kind of the umbrella tag. Everything kind of, that was the focus. That's everything linked back in disaster risk reduction. Obviously, climate change in the last 5, 6, 7 years has perhaps risen to greater prominence. So again, our business has been slightly recast into, well, climate change adaptation. What does it mean? What does all our work mean in terms of climate change? Of course, more recently, and not new as a topic, but recently as a tag, has been urban. I mean, just an aside, I mean, I found, interestingly, in my role with IFRC, you know, every 2 years there's a World Urban Forum, which is convened by UN Habitat and a host city. It's the kind of the big in a housing jamboree. In 2008, the event was in Nanjing, in China. And I remember when I tried to kind of canvass my colleagues in health and disaster to go, no one was that interested. So it was really me and my team very much around shelter. The same in Rio in 2010. However, in 2012, the World Urban Forum in Naples, although my team had been preparing for some sort of 6 months for this, about 3 months before, a circular email comes around from my colleagues dealing with disaster risk reduction saying, this big event's coming up, it's dealing with urban, they are now addressing this. And I'm like, excuse me? I thought urban was me. I thought that was ours. Suddenly they were going, no, that's theirs. They were recasting disaster risk reduction. It was urban risk. I'm like, well, actually it's for all of us. But, I mean, my point here is that there is a danger, and I think we really feel this within the built environment sector, that all these things are relevant. I mean, safer housing and settlements, absolutely. That's what we're all striving for. Addressing issues of climate change, particularly in this region, I'm thinking of the Pacific, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure it's part and parcel of daily business. But I think we struggle a bit to, you know, find our kind of position within that. And who knows what the next trend is going to be. You know, I think we're always chasing to actually ensure we sort of engage. I think it's something that will be interesting during the course of the day, you know, how we address this. The other kind of thing, as we think about broad humanitarian work, the other area of kind of emerging trends has been, you know, the nature of kind of the programming business. And again, I just highlight a couple of examples of, again, the lenses through which we are now either looking or increasingly need to look. I mean, first is around what assistance do we provide? You know, I suppose the older days, it's still there very much. It's very much top down. It was material assistance. It's technical assistance. Obviously, cash programming is now a big feature. I mean, very relevant in the business of housing. How does housing happen outside of disaster? Well, cash is an enabler, whether it's actual, you know, a mortgage to buy a property, or whether it's cash to pay someone to do work, or it's in kind, you know, you sort of barter and trade in terms of skill sets versus assets. You know, housing is a big asset, and cash is a big part of that business. Obviously, in relief, you know, cash has been making its presence felt. I think the important thing for us is that it means flexibility. It enables people to make some of those own choices. And housing is very much an individual choice thing. You know, cash, whether it's cash in kind or vouchers, or as we did as Red Cross in Chile after the earthquake in 2010, we provided people with a debit card that was redeemable at the nationwide chain of DIY or Home Depot stores, with technical support, so they can actually go and achieve their own solutions. So, you know, it does enable a different way of doing business. Another example is around the sort of growing field of what is called sort of beneficiary communications. Well, I sort of say better late than never on that. But I think the important thing is with technology, particularly mobile technology these days, with social media, it is quite possible, it is eminently possible, you know, for affected communities to actually be telling us or response actors or their governments what they need. So rather than being a kind of supply-driven, you know, business, it can be far more demand-driven. And we need to kind of sit up and take notice of that. Again, I think it's particularly relevant to us, as housing is such an individual business. This is something we should be embracing and really harnessing. And I say, you know, we are trying to do that. Again, it'll be interesting to see during the course of the day how that comes up. And lastly on this kind of thing of trends is the whole sort of rise, I suppose I've alluded to it already, but the growth of sort of information technology and the fact that we have this information at our fingertips. But not just us, everybody has that information. So, you know, assessments, pictures, you know, anyone can look at, if you have internet access, for example, you could look at Google Maps and see the impact of the disaster that's affected your town, affected your neighbourhood. You can have an opinion, you can engage on that. I mean, I see it as kind of, in some ways, sort of democratising the process. Again, I think we need to better recognise that, but I think we also need to see how we can better harness that, again, to benefit our sector. And again, thinking of the big context, we need to bear in mind that in terms of milestones, we're obviously towards the tail end of the process to establish new sustainable development goals. Obviously, the Millennium Development Goals set up, the Millennium, you know, come to an end in 2015. That conversation now in terms of those new goals is rolling. In fact, in some ways, it's almost, I think we're all a bit late to be talking about it now. It's almost now kind of finalised within the UN system and the high-level panel. Of course, that will have a big impact, whether we like it or not. Those benchmarks, the Millennium Development Goals, were specific targets, you know, for housing, useful, but perhaps not useful enough. The big question, I suppose, for me is the extent to which the new goals will be universal. You know, will they apply to Australia as well as Bangladesh, for example? And where will housing fit? Will housing be there? We shall see.